Joy Bulamwini will speak about her work on facial analysis technology. Joy is the founder of the Algorithmic Justice League, which researches the social implications and technical capabilities of artificial intelligence and increases the public's understanding of bias in technology. She is a Rhodes Scholar and a Fulbright Fellow and holds two master's degrees, one from Oxford and one from MIT. Her bachelor's is from the George Institute of Technology, and she is currently completing a PhD focused on participatory AI at MIT. Joy.
Thank you for the introduction. Well, today it is my pleasure to share with you some of the research that we've been doing with the Algorithmic Justice League that shows how facial analysis systems being developed by leading tech companies have concerning issues. So here on this intro slide, you see Amazon mislabeling Oprah's face as male. And why might this matter? Well, Amazon currently sells facial recognition technology to law enforcement departments. You have IBM misclassifying Serena Williams' face here. And with the image captioning, you see that Microsoft is struggling on Michelle Obama describing her as a young man. So these examples I show to remind us that technology is not infallible, and even the largest companies that are making billion-dollar investments into this space run into issues. So I want to go over facial analysis technology major tasks, just so we are clear on the type of technology that's being discussed. So if you look at facial analysis technology, it's broadly about pattern recognition. Machine learning techniques are used to come up with these patterns for various tasks using large training sets. So the most fundamental task for facial analysis technology is face detection. Is there a face or not? Once you pass that in the pipeline, you might ask different types of questions, like what kind of face are you seeing in the first place? What's the gender of the face? What's the age of the face? Then you have another set of questions you can ask, which is really about, do you know the identity of the face? Have you seen this face before? So this is what's generally referred to as facial recognition. And you have face identification, which is a one-to-many matching. So think of searching for a missing person or criminal suspect. And then you also have face verification, which is looking at a one-to-one matching. So think about unlocking your iPhone or paying for something with your face. So all of these tasks are based on data, and they are also susceptible to something that I call the coded gaze. So let me go back here. So the coded gaze is my term for algorithmic bias that can lead to exclusionary experiences or discriminatory practices. And in this video, which I hope will play in a while, it shows that I'm actually coding in a white mask to have my face detected by these systems, whereas my lighter skin colleague in this particular video just has her face detected without needing to put on a white mask. And so this personal experience is what led me to start exploring issues within facial analysis technology. And I decided to look beyond face detection because there were some systems that detected my face and there were other systems that didn't detect my face. But those that did ended up labeling me male or getting my age off. So I wanted to see if this was just my unique facial structure or something more systematic. And these might seem like innocuous mistakes. But when I came across the perpetual lineup report from Georgetown Law that showed over 1 in 2 adults in the US, that's over 117 million people, has their face in a face recognition network that can be searched unwarranted using algorithms that haven't been audited for accuracy, I realized these types of errors could have real-world consequences. And if you look across the pond in the UK, where they are reporting real-world performance metrics on these systems as deployed, you're getting false positive match rates of over 90%. So in the UK, you've had more than 2,400 innocent people with their faces misidentified as criminal suspects. And you even have a case where two innocent women were misidentified as men. So some of those misclassifications that I've shown earlier do make an impact. And when we're thinking about facial analysis technology, we're not just talking about its application for law enforcement. You also have systems that are being used in hiring. So HireVue is a company that purports to do video analytics, and in these videos, they apply AI to pick up verbal and nonverbal cues to help inform predictions about a potential candidate's performance. So in this case of predictive analytics, the face is being analyzed, but they say the way that they analyze the face is they compare it to the top performers at an existing firm. So if you have a largely homogeneous group of top performers, it could be the case that it's picking up on mannerisms that are more to the demographic and less to the actual task. Beyond facial analysis technology, AI is being used in a host of decision-making areas, which makes it even more pertinent to make sure we're understanding how these systems function across a diverse range of individuals. And so this is what my dissertation work, my MIT master's thesis, focused on, which was saying for commercially available AI systems that do gender classification, how accurate are they across different genders, and does the skin type also matter? But before I could really investigate this question, I ran into a problem, which is that the existing standards, the existing gold standard measures for success in the field are actually largely flawed in that they're overwhelmingly male and predominantly lighter skin. So if we're in a case where we have pale male data sets setting the benchmark, we're destined to fail the rest of society for technologies where data is destiny, and that is where we see ourselves now. And to bring this point home, if you look at Facebook back in 2014, they released a paper called Deepface, and there was much rejoicing in the computer vision world. Why? Because they improved the state-of-the-art performance on the task of face verification by almost 20%, which was great news because it showed that there were effective techniques being employed using deep learning. However, if you look at that gold standard benchmark, right, you'll see that it is 78% male and 84% white. So if this is the gold standard we're using, we're giving ourselves a false sense of progress, which can lead to misleading technology. And it's not just industry benchmarks that are vulnerable. Even if you look at the benchmarks from the National Institute for Standards and Technology, you'll also see that they reflect some of these large skews. So in the case of the IJB-A benchmark, you'll see that it is about 76% male. Now, if you do an intersectional breakdown of this benchmark where you're looking at skin type as well as gender, you'll see there's an overrepresentation of lighter skin men here, 60%, and less than 5% of that particular benchmark are of darker skin women. So it became a bit more evident to me why some of the issues I was encountering might not have surfaced in the industry or in research. So given these skews, I developed a more inclusive benchmark so we could see the performance of these systems across a range of skin types, and again, with a benchmark that was better balanced on gender parity. And so I was able to test commercially available AI systems that are being sold right now. And I chose IBM and Microsoft, given their huge investments within AI cloud services, and also Face++, in that Face++ has access to one of the largest databases of Chinese faces, and we're often hearing that China will have the data advantage when it comes to AI. So did that play out? Well, when we look at the results, we'll see that the overall accuracy of these systems on our particular benchmark seems all right, 88% to 94%. But once you start to break down the performance by gender or skin type or the intersection, that's where disparities begin to emerge. So if you look at the breakdown by gender, you'll see that there is an error gap, right? So this doesn't depend on the skin type at all, just one gender or the other. And if we do a breakdown by skin type, we also see that there's a substantial gap in terms of the performance, with much better performance on lighter skin than darker skin. Now, once we start to do an intersectional breakdown, we really start to see interesting patterns emerging. So in this case, the best performance group, performing group, are lighter skin males, and in the worst performing group, we have darker skin females. This was the best case scenario with Microsoft. When we move to China with Face++, right, here we see the best performance is on darker males, showing the importance of an intersectional analysis, but we also see that it's failing in 1 in 3 women of color, right, 65% accuracy. And similarly for IBM, you see that the worst performing group, darker skin females, and IBM, it also doesn't perform as well on darker males compared to its peers. And even if you look at the lighter skin section here, right, there's again a difference between male performance and female performance. Now, if we disaggregate these numbers, we get performance results that I found quite surprising for commercially sold products for binary classification, where you have a 50-50 shot of getting it right by just guessing. So you see here for type skin women, dark-skinned women, you have error rates as high as 47% on a binary classification task, real-world commercially sold products. So I decided to share these results with the companies to see what they would say. And IBM and Microsoft got back to the research group, and all of the companies released new APIs after this external audit, so new systems that were reportedly improved. And if we look at the self-reported improvement, right, we see that there's a significant jump in accuracy for their worst performing group. But when we did our external evaluation, we did see an improvement, but the improvement was not quite as high as they reported, because the type of data that they're using and also the thresholds they're going to set it to will, of course, put the companies in the best light. But even if we have more accurate systems, accuracy does not mitigate abuse. And you have a case, for example, where IBM was reported to have equipped the New York City Police Department with facial analysis technologies that could search video footage by skin color, by facial hair, and even the clothing people were wearing. So essentially providing tools for racial profiling that could violate civil liberty. So here the question isn't about accuracy, it's about abuse and use. Which is why I'm here speaking to the FTC, because it's up to regulators to protect us. And within the face space, our research shows there are specific steps that can be taken to make sure these systems are not abused or weaponized. One is making sure that companies actually know the performance of their system, so they're not misleading us by presenting software that supposedly works well for everybody, but it's truly just optimized for a small subset of the population. We also need the results to be published in terms of how they're performing on the benchmarks that exist, and we need to support independent research evaluation. Otherwise, the self-reported results we'll get will not give us the true picture. But we also need to make sure that when we are doing these national benchmarks, we're also making sure these benchmarks are representative. So an immediate step that can happen right now is requiring NIST to publish the demographic and phenotypic breakdown of their existing benchmarks, and then also making sure that these numbers are disaggregated in a way where we can see if there are intersectional performance differences. Beyond the research, we also need to be thinking about consent. Do we have a choice in whether or not our faces are being used? Facebook right now has over a billion face prints of biometric data that many people don't know they are collecting. Could there be an option to purge that information? Transparency is often crucial, but not just in terms of how systems are performing based on these benchmarks, but what they're doing in the real world. And we saw the importance of that when we see the results from the UK. And I see that time's up, so I'll go quickly on these last parts. We need due process. If you have a company like HireVue using face-based analytics to predict your potential job performance, is there any way to contest that kind of prediction? And what mechanisms can regulators put in place so that there is more due process? And given the rapid adoption of facial analysis technology, we really have to think about its implications on privacy. You can change your password. You can't necessarily change your face as easily. So I'll leave it there for regulators to think about how to safeguard our faces in this new frontier of algorithmic justice. Thank you.